go. Ready? Go.
It's Football Friday.
We gotta have it now.
Powered by Bud Light, proud partner of the Seattle Seahawks. On your home for the Huskies and the 12th man.
You're getting high now. You're getting high. You're too high, baby.
Seattle Sports Radio 950.
Let's go get it.
KJR.
Okay, no time to screw around today. Kevin, where are you at?
I'm in the Redbox producer's booth. Redbox, newest movies, fresh in the theater, under $2 a night. Head to the box, stream on demand. Those are your choices.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday, and that means we got to do headlines.
Now, from the Star Rentals Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Brought to you by Venue Kings, VenueKings.com. Injury report, Eskridge, Penny, Shell, all out for the Seahawks on Sunday. Dalvin Cook, game time decision. Sounds like he'll probably play. How effective he'll be, I don't know. Grab the ankle, give it a little twist.
Oh,
Ian.
Did
I say that out loud?
Are you the sort of person that would grab a sheet off the home plate and steal it?
Grab his ankle and give it a twist. speaking of football injuries, Christian McCaffrey, hamstring, out for the next couple weeks at least. As of right now, not going on the injured list. Fantasy football owners across the country in absolute mourning. Number one pick in almost every draft. That's all people were thinking about last night. Boy, how about Houston? Glad to see I was playing them this year. There's a win. Jason Pierre-Paul will also miss the game for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Rams this weekend. So there you go. Mariners, we should talk about them. They're in Los Angeles. Actually, they're in Anaheim tonight. That's in Orange County, south of Los Angeles.
Oh.
Taking on the Angels. 6:40 first pitch. Still in it. Two games out. They're still in it until Kikuchi takes the mound again. Then they're not in it. But they're still in it right now. Whoo, what a deal that is. All right, let's go. Here we go.
Greg Cosell of NFL Films and NFL Matchup joins Ian for a weekly breakdown of all things NFL. Brought to you by Seattle Cider, not your standard cider. And by Two Beers. Life is just a little more honest after two beers. Make sure you check out both Seattle Cider and Two Beers at the Woods Tasting Room in the Soto Industrial District. Now with Greg Cosell, here's Ian Furness.
All right, with that, here we go. It's our Friday edition with Greg Cosell, brought to you by Seattle Cider and Two Beers. And we hear that open. We check in with Greg Cosell. The weekend is upon us. Week three of the NFL season is upon us as well. Mr. Cosell, how are you, my friend?
Ian, how are you?
I'm good. Interesting matchup we're going to talk about this weekend, I think, as well, with the Seahawks and the our good friends, the Minnesota Vikings. I should mention it's all brought to you by our good friends at Seattle Cider and Two Beers Brewing. Hey, Fresh Hop IPA is here. Fresh Hop is made with Zappa hops from Hops Direct. And now comes a newly designed box. Fresh Hop season, a favorite for many IPA drinkers. Season short, make sure you try this great beer while you can. Two Beers also have a draft-only Fresh Hop collaboration coming soon with their friends from Bailbreaker over there in Yakima. I tasted the Fresh Hop last week down at the Woods Tasting Room, courtesy of our good friends at Two Beers, and it is sensational. And, of course, Seattle Cider's got the pumpkin spice cider and the three pepper spice cider as well down there at the Woods Tasting Room, Marginal Way and First Avenue South. Greg, let me start first with, we spent a lot of time last week talking about this, before we get to the Vikings, about the Seahawks offense and how great it looked against Indianapolis. Last week, that wasn't the case. I'm not sure what the difference was, some penalties behind the chains, but what did you see with that Seattle offense last week against Tennessee?
Well, they struggled to run the ball. And, they, you know, keep this in mind. They've run, the second fewest offensive plays in the league this year through two games. Now, two games is not a large sample, Ian, but when you're an offense that really wants to start with the run game and you can't run the ball at all, it kind of shuts down a lot of things. And then you get caught up in, and a lot of teams are getting, it's funny you asked me that, because a lot of teams in the league are starting to do this. You get caught up in the idea that, hey, my quarterback has to be great every week in order for us to win. Now, that's not the Seahawks' philosophy, clearly, even though Russell Wilson has been a great player. But it's very hard to play like that in the league. Now, there's other issues because they did still score 30 points. Obviously, one of the touchdowns was a bust, but, hey, that happens in the NFL. So it's hard to point your finger on why they lost, but if you're just looking at their offense in a vacuum, which is what coaches do, they're going to have to run the ball better than they did last week.
Greg, my eyes told me something, but your film will tell you something much more in detail. So I'll ask you in a very general sense, because what my eyes saw, okay, they didn't run the ball well. I definitely, you know, we saw that. Penalties really tribute to some of those drive killers. I mean, that puts you behind the sticks, first and 15, first and 20, changes a lot of different things. Tyler Lockett talked about that this week. But that first week we saw, and you discussed it and you kind of went into detail last week, against Indianapolis, we saw a lot of motion, a lot of bootlegs with Russell, things like that, some misdirection. Did I not see as much? It felt like I didn't see as much of that this past week.
No, you didn't. You didn't. And sometimes, look, they got ahead and maybe they just felt they could do basic stuff and win the game because it was 24-9 at half. My guess is in recent years, Ian, there's not been a lot of games in Seattle where they're up by 15 at the half and they lose. But they had issues. Their O-line had issues. They had issues in the run game. They had issues in pass protection. They particularly had issues inside versus stunts. There were inside stunts by DeNico Autry and Jeffrey Simmons that caused problems. And obviously that doesn't happen on every snap, but it caused problems. So their offensive line was a bit of an issue last week, and the game got away from them in the second half. They couldn't stabilize the game. Most coaches, and I would bet Pete Carroll falls into this category because you know how he feels about the run game. But I think most coaches feel if the game is starting to get away from you a little bit in terms of pace and tempo, as that game started to in the second half, even though they were still ahead, Ian, you could feel the game start to shift, correct, watching it live?
Yeah.
I could feel that watching the tape, not even watching it live. Most coaches believe the way to stabilize your offense is to run the football. Rarely do coaches think in terms of, let's stabilize the offense by chucking the ball. And they just couldn't get any run game going whatsoever. They got put in too many long yardage situations, and then they became susceptible to the stunts and games of the Titans' defensive front.
What will they see this week against the Minnesota Vikings? What's going to break down of that Minnesota Vikings defense?
You know, they're an interesting defense because obviously they've now got Patrick Peterson. He plays right corner. Breland plays left corner. Two new corners. Alexander's still there. He's the slot corner. They still have Eric Kendricks. He and Nick Vigil are the nickel linebackers. They only play nickel. They do not play dime. When they do go to their base, which I imagine they'll be in this game to some degree. I'm trying to remember who that third linebacker is.
I'll tell you. Their third line. So the linebackers, Barr, Kendricks, Vigil, Blake Lynch.
Yep. Because he hard. The thing is, the reason I didn't remember is against Arizona last week, he didn't play many snaps at all. But it's Blake Lynch, number 48. But they've got a young defensive line of which some players I'm very intrigued by. DJ Wonnum I'm intrigued by, and he was actually used as a spy at times on Murray, so I'm wondering if he'll be used as a spy at times on Russell Wilson. But they've got some young players on this front that are kind of intriguing to me. It's not a bad front at all. Hunter is a really, really good player.
That's number 99, Daniel Hunter. Yeah. There's some familiar names. Hunter. We know Sheldon Richardson from here. Everson Griffin's been around for a while, but it does look like a little bit of a youth moving up front with Pierce, Tomlinson, and Wonnum, right?
Yeah. And Hunter he's a guy that you definitely need to be concerned about as a pass rusher because he can bend. He's very flexible. Their safeties are Woods and Smith, and Woods essentially plays deep safety, and Woods and Smith tends to move around a lot. That's always what they've done with him. But they're an interesting defense because they've got a lot of new players, and Mike Zimmer's always been good with defense, but they're not a special defense by any means. And Patrick Peterson is definitely not what he used to be.
But Shad Breland, number 21, their other corner, statistically speaking, and depending on what numbers you want to look at, has had a really difficult start in the first two games this season. Is that a place where Seattle can take advantage with a Lockett or a Metcalf? And Metcalf, frankly, hasn't had his best start to the season either.
It's interesting you say that because Breland was benched last week for Cameron Dantzler. I think he was injured slightly, but he's also struggled from a performance standpoint. But what the Vikings are defensively, relative to the rest of the league, they do not play a lot of man-to-man coverage. They play a lot of cover two, which is for some teams is coming back into the league. So they play a good amount of cover two. They play cover three, but cover three does turn into man-to-man depending on the nature of the routes outside the numbers. But they are not a strict let's line up and play man-to-man defense. So you end up attacking zone coverage. And I think that the Seahawks can do that. Look, we saw them, the Lockett touchdown week one against the Colts. Came against what we call quarter half. It's cover six. It's cover two to one side of the field, and it's cover four to the other side of the field. So we call that cover six, quarter half. You're going to get those kinds of opportunities in this game.
Does that lead you to some deep coverage against the safety? Is that what happened? It felt like the safeties got burned against Indianapolis. Is that what happened? Does that kind of lead you if you're going? Because we know Seattle likes those deep routes.
Yeah. And I think you do have to challenge them because Seattle does like a lot of those mirrored deeper crossers or overs, as some coaches call them. We've seen that a lot with Lockett and Metcalf running those mirrored crosses, which they do, by the way, against teams that play split safety, because particularly if you're playing the cover four portion of split safety, those can cause some problems, those mirrored over routes. So you're going to see that they're going to attack. There'll be play action with the outside zone run game, and then they will look to attack down the field. They've got to get Metcalf going. You know, who knows? Look, he obviously had some catches week one, but, you know, last week was a very odd offensive performance for them, in my view, particularly coming off week one when I saw a lot of things that were very Ram-based, and last week just didn't have that feel to it.
Before I flip to the side of the ball, Greg Cosell joining us, brought to you by Seattle Cider and Two Beers, NFL Films, ESPN Matchup. Before I flip over and look at the Vikings offense, Seattle defense, just a little more from you on DK Metcalf. Was last week just a product of, as you said, just kind of a weird game? They tried to run the ball. They got behind the sticks. It just felt like DK wasn't there. I don't feel like we've seen the DK Metcalf, whether maybe the new offense is something he's still getting used to, whatever the case is. It doesn't seem like 14 has been a big factor like he should be early on.
Well, the other factor to keep in mind is they've run very few plays. And when you run very few plays, they've only run 105 plays in two games. That's 52.5 per game. In today's NFL, that's quite honestly a little embarrassing. Teams are running 75 plays, a lot of the good teams.
And so, I should add, too, their time of possession is dead last in the NFL, which is probably goes hand in hand. It's probably synonymous with what you're saying right there.
Right.
Yeah, dead last
time of possession. When you're not running a lot of plays, you know, there's not as many targets for receivers. So it's easy to say you have to get Metcalf involved, but they need to have an offense that has some kind of rhythmic feel to it and sustainability to it so they can get deeper into their playbook. That's the issue. When you don't run plays, you end up not getting into your playbook, and you know, you don't feel comfortable calling a lot of things. So, you know, right now that's where they are through two games. My guess is it will change. They've got good players, but through 2 weeks, that's been an issue. They haven't had the ball, and they haven't run many plays.
And that would all fall into the category of where were the tight ends last week as well, probably all in that same category. All right, let me flip to the other side of the football. I look at that. Kirk Cousins having a nice start to the season statistically. Yep. Let's start with Kirk Cousins, what you're seeing from him first two games.
Let's just start with their offense as a whole. There's no mystery to what the Vikings are. They're one of the teams in the NFL that does not play a lot with three wide receivers, what we call 11 personnel. Less than 50% of their snaps come out of 11 personnel. They're more of a base personnel offense. They line up in 12 personnel, two tight ends, three tight ends at times, 13 personnel. They play the fullback Ham a good amount, 21 personnel. And they're multiple with their formation looks from these base personnel packages. In other words, they don't just, if they have two tight ends on the field, they're not just necessarily attached to the formation. If they have Ham, the fullback, on the field, he's not necessarily just in the backfield. So they feature base personnel packages. And it all starts with the run game with Dalvin Cook, who I know he practiced today, and apparently he'll be good to go for this game.
Right.
It all starts with him. It's predominantly a zone-based run game, but they will do some gap scheme, and that means that a guard pulls across the formation. And they will do some of what we call pin-pull, where they pull the tackle to the outside, and it's normally the right tackle, O'Neal, because he's a much more athletic player than the left tackle, Hill. So normally if they do pin-pull, it's to the right side of their formation. But everything starts with their run game.
75, Brian O'Neill, the right tackle that Greg is referring to. Keep an eye on him. Dalvin Cook, dynamic back. It's the third week in a row Seattle has seen what I would consider to be an elite running back, all three kind of different. Jonathan Taylor, they did a nice job against him in the first week. Obviously, Derrick Henry, they did not. And then this guy, Dalvin Cook, is different than both those two guys. But the one similarity is, statistically, over the last 2 years, yards from scrimmage, number one in the NFL is Derrick Henry. Number two, Dalvin Cook, but they do it differently, don't they?
And, Cook is really explosive. He's got a lot of juice. He's just one of those guys. You just see he looks a little different than other guys. But keep one thing in mind. Last year, Cook had the second most first down rushes in the league behind Derrick Henry. I believe that's the case again this year. So this is a team that, like I said, there's no mystery. They want to run the ball. Now, they do have a very good play action pass game off their run game. We haven't seen as much of it this year as I think they've done in the past. And they also have a play action boot game where Cousins gets outside the pocket and it can be very effective. And they often have a misdirection element to that because second level defenders, linebackers, they have boot rules when quarterbacks boot and they respond to that. And by the way, Bobby Wagner's as good as there is in the league at recognizing these kinds of things. So it may not be as big a factor versus the Seahawks as it is against other teams. But the larger point still applies, Ian. They do feature the play action pass. That is standard for what they do, working off the run game with Dalvin Cook.
And when they do that play action, I'm envisioning Thielen and or Jefferson, right? Doing like a crossing route or something along those lines. That those guys just, they do a lot of damage, those two.
Yeah, they're very good. And now their third receiver this year is KJ Osborne, who I actually watched his tape coming out of Miami a few years ago and thought he could play in the league. And he's now become their third receiver. And he's not a bad player. So, but again, they don't play out of 11 personnel an awful lot. That's not a foundational personnel package for them.
Seattle, that first week, a lot of two deep safety looks. What did we see last week and what would work? What do you think? Put yourself in the film room of Seattle right now with Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs against this Minnesota team. What kind of look do you think they'll want to show?
Yeah, Seattle's played a lot of zone coverage through two games. They've played a lot of cover two. They've played cover three. They've not played much man-to-man. I believe only the Eagles have played fewer snaps of man coverage, cover one, than the Seahawks. So they've chosen. This is obviously by choice.
Right,
they have
right.
chosen, Ian, not to be a man-to-man defense. Now, I can't answer why that's the case, because obviously when it's man-to-man, people just think of your corners. Well, if your corners can't cover, you can't play man. Well, it's more than your corners because you have to match up to tight ends as well. You know, you have to match up to slot receivers. It's not just your outside corners. So there's a reason they're playing this way. And I'm going to say this, and I've watched now two games, and I watched last year. My sense is that the coaching staff, and this is a tape study comment. It's not, I have no inside information. It's just a tape study comment. I think they're still trying to figure out the best way to use Jamal Adams. That's my sense watching the tape. Because he's not been blitzing a ton, which is what a lot of people think he does really well. They've played a lot of split safety, so he hasn't automatically been on the line of scrimmage. He was on the line of scrimmage a little more this past week than he was week one, but I think they're trying to figure that out. I'm not saying he's not a good player. That's not my point. You know, there are very few transcendent players that are great at everything, Ian, and you have to try to find out, particularly in the context of a defense where there's other players, you have to try to figure out how to best deploy a player to maximize his particular skill set.
No sacks, no hurries, no hits by Jamal Adams so far this year. So, I think we're all kind of curious as to what they're trying to do and figure that out. And as you said, over the last 2 years, probably trying to figure out how that works. All right. As always, you're the best. ESPN matchup show coming up this weekend. As Kevin always says, get that remote, that Comcast remote, blue button, ESPN matchup show, NFL matchup, and yell it, and it'll record it for you. You should be having – if you're listening to this show, this segment every week, you sure already have the series recording set up. What are you guys breaking down this week?
Well, I heard there's a pretty good game on the West Coast between the Rams and the Bucks, so we're dealing with that one. And actually, we gave a full segment to that game just because it's a really intriguing game. And then you got the Chiefs-Chargers. Chiefs-Chargers, to me, is a really fascinating game. You know, obviously, the Chiefs lost last week. They still score a lot of points. Chargers, Justin Herbert's a really, really good player. They lost as well, but that's a really intriguing game. And the Monday night game's fascinating. The way the Cowboys played last week, where they ran the ball and didn't have Dak Prescott drop back as much as he has been. Eagles-Cowboys, always a good, you know, there's always NFC West games that are fascinating. Eagles-Cowboys is always a fascinating NFC East game.
Kevin agrees with you, the Eagles fan on our staff. So I appreciate it, Greg. You're the best. Thanks to Seattle Cider and Two Beers. We'll check in with you in a week's time. That's Greg Cosell, brought to you by Seattle Cider and Two Beers. We'll take a break, come back with more at 950 KJR.
Coming to you live from our Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio 950 KJR. This is our weekly conversation with NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. Brought to you by Porter & York. Rare meat, well done. Visit PorterAndYork.com. Now with Ian Rappaport, here's Ian Furness.
Lots of news around the National Football League. Ian Rappaport joins us from the NFL Network. He's our insider. I did see a note, and I'm not sure who was the first to break this. Rapp, I'm not sure if you saw this. Andre Curtis, who's basically the secondary coach for the Seahawks, not going to Minneapolis this week for personal reasons. Deshaun Shedd is taking his place. Interesting note there.
I'm not sure. Interesting for Deshaun Shedd, who seems to be a kind of up-and-coming, impressive coach. I don't know him, but I do know what I've heard, which is really, really good things. I don't know if that'll make a difference in the game. It's just kind of interesting.
It is, and I actually did a long we did a feature story on him for TV here about a year and a half, 2 years ago. He's salt of the earth. He'll be a head coach in the NFL at some point down the road. He is what you just said, up and coming star in coaching and very well respected. All right, let's get to it. We've got all kinds of news around the NFL. What are you hearing first of all, Minneapolis, from Dalvin Cook?
Well, he did very, very little today. I think he was officially listed as no practice, though he did some things. You know, he's a running back, and sometimes ankle sprains, you know, you can sort of gut those out. So I would not rule him out just yet. I know they're going to give him every opportunity to play. It seems like a stretch. It seems like a tall task. We'll see, but I know they are. They're at least going to give him a chance, so not quite ruled out yet for Minnesota.
I want to get to the big news, and that's the wild card weekend in just a second, but let me bang through a couple other injury notes because this is obviously people are concerned, and oftentimes it has to do with fantasy. The biggest story came last night. What's the latest on Christian McCaffrey and that hamstring?
It's not great, but I would also say it's not sort of the catastrophic thing, at least that it seemed. You know, and it's funny, like talking to some of those guys today, they ruled him out so fast, like within 45 seconds, that I think everybody was like, oh, my God, his leg must have fallen off. And then later they were like, why did we do that? Like, why did we rule him out so fast? Because it doesn't seem like it's a major injury. So from what I understand, he's expected to miss a few weeks, which is probably 2 to 3 games. So I don't believe they're going to put him on IR just yet. You could do it, let's say, like Wednesday, right? And it would still sort of count the same, so there's no rush or anything. But I don't think IR is the plan, so it seems like he's going to probably miss 2 games and then have, like, an outside shot at the third. So, you know, the hope is it's not like last year where he just spends the whole time on the sideline, and I think, you know, some of it will be kind of him being responsible and not going nuts in rehab to try to get out. But, you know, either way, Carolina Panthers going to be without their star for a couple games.
Let me rapid fire a couple more injuries, and we'll get to the wild card weekend. DeAndre Hopkins, Odell Beckham Jr., and Lamar Jackson, their status.
Okay. DeAndre Hopkins has ribs, didn't practice at all this week, which almost always I'd be like, okay, not going to play, except it's Hopkins, and he always plays. So my guess is he plays, but we will see. We'll see about that. Odell is officially a go. He is he's going to make his big return since, I think, week 7 when he tore his ACL. He is you know, once was full practice this week. And it's been interesting because I think they thought he was going to play in week one. He declared himself not quite ready, and I think everybody was surprised. So now they basically were cautious about wanting to go through every single bit of practice before they decided off the injury report is expected to play. And then Lamar Jackson is fine. He had a little stomach bug yesterday, so wasn't able to practice. Was able to practice today, was full go, is going to play.
All right, I saw this morning. Why don't you fill in our listeners who might have missed it? Wild card weekend in the NFL this year is going to take on a whole new look. We're 17-game schedule and everything else we're going through with the NFL and the changes, adding a playoff team last year. Tell us about what wild card weekend is going to look like.
It's going to be longer. Wild card weekend, what is it called? Super wild card weekend.
Super wild card, yes.
Not regular wild card weekend, super wild card weekend, is going to be longer. So it's going to be, instead of three games on Saturday, it's going to be two games on Saturday, which three games was a lot on Saturday, and the 1 p.m. slot was, you know, not the prime TV spot. So two on Saturday, three on Sunday, including the Sunday night game, and then one on Monday Night Football, which presumably will be on ESPN, but as of right now, has not yet been put on ESPN. And then I would also say that, you know, one of the other things is the team that plays Monday night is not going to have to play Saturday. Might play Sunday. We will play Sunday, but not Saturday. So the short week that everybody was nervous about, not exactly going to happen.
The thinking behind that, is that just to kind of keep all the TV partners happy and add a game for ESPN? Because I know there's always like some bickering going on. Like Fox doesn't want to lose their NFC teams. That's why they pay big money. And if you're CBS, you don't want to lose a marquee AFC game. But that's kind of gone by the wayside the last couple of years as well, like who broadcasts when. NBC slides in there, they grab one or the other. I mean, it's always I always kind of feel like there's a lot of moving parts with these things.
Yeah, although didn't ESPN have a game last year? I think they did.
Yeah, they always
trying to remember.
ESPN and NBC, I think, have the Saturday games, if I'm not mistaken. Does that sound
right? Doesn't. Yeah. It's not consistent with which day, but yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah.
Right, that's right. It's not. But okay, that's right. But you're right. There is a lot of jockeying. But I think the main thing is Saturday at 1 isn't a great spot. And remember, because they – I'm trying to think. Okay, because they moved it back a week.
Right.
They now don't compete with the College Football National Championship.
Gotcha.
So they take a game out of the one spot and put it at the 8 p.m. or whatever it is on Monday, so you get prime time instead of Saturday at 1, like more eyeballs. And, you know, like the NFL is very good business. So they do what they can to create good TV viewing, and it's also better because more people get to watch it, including us.
I'm concerned that they don't have a spot anymore for the Texans game.
Oh,
because the Texans game was always the first game on Saturday.
I know.
It was. It is.
No, that's not true. It was always the Saturday night game, wasn't it?
No,
Texans?
No. That Saturday game that no one would watch because it's like Saturday, especially on the West Coast, like Saturday at like, you know, noon or something.
Texans-Baltimore.
Texans-Baltimore.
Yeah.
Or Titans. Yeah, Texans-Tennessee. Yeah, that's what that would end up being most of the time. So, yeah. Well, they don't have to worry about the Texans in the playoffs.
I will say
that. No.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's going to be a thing. Now, they did play hard.
Yeah, they played hard.
Not well, but they did play hard.
They played hard. Yes, Rasheed Wallace. Both teams played hard. God bless. Good night.
God bless. Good night.
Yeah. Yeah, they played hard.
Yep.
They're awful. I mean, what's going to happen with Deshaun? We're just going to watch him sit out the entire season?
Yes. Yeah. You know, but the weird thing is that, and everyone, I mean, it is crazy. So, like, it's almost like I have to keep reminding myself that this is not normal because it's become normal. Like, it's just a superstar quarterback sitting out the entire season is now normal, even though it's not. But it actually really does make sense for them to not trade him during the season. It makes sense for them to not allow him to affect the quality of the draft pick that they're getting.
That's a good point.
That is their win. That is their lottery ticket. That is how they rebuild their franchise with three first-rounders and more. And so, you know, the reality is, for better or worse, this year doesn't matter much for the Texans. Like, does it matter if they go 4-13 or 3-14? No, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
So,
no, you're right.
It actually, as long as you can withstand the criticism, and we're way beyond that in Houston. then it actually makes sense.
Ian Rappaport, you'll watch him all weekend on the NFL Network, Sunday morning specifically. Tune in early on. Follow Matt Rapsheet on Twitter. Thanks to Porter New York, porternewyork.com. We'll talk to you in 7 days, my friend. Thanks.
All right, look forward to it, man. Take care.
There you go. Ian Rappaport joining us. We'll come back. Greg Cosell had some something caught our attention that Greg Cosell said regarding Jamal Adams. We'll play that for you in case you missed it coming up next.
Now back to Football Friday, powered by Bud Light on your home for the Huskies and the 12th man, Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
All right, we're back. What are you smiling for?
Huh? See what's going on in there?
No.
You got a teammate.
Wow.
On club glasses.
We'll get to that later. 2:45.
Oh, boy. I can't wait.
I can't either.
He looks smart.
Let's not get carried away. Greg Cosell on with us earlier today. Boy, there is it's becoming more and more of a lightning rod is Jamal Adams. It's almost like you have to pick a side, you know, Team Adams or anti-Adams, one or the other.
We just need to get like a double letter in there so you can be like, never mind.
unsolicited, and I want take a close listen to this because it was at the end of our conversation with Greg Cosell today. Unsolicited, we're talking about the defense, what Seattle's doing. Greg Cosell offered this up, his assessment of what he has seen on tape with Jamal Adams.
I've watched now 2 games, and I watched last year. My sense is that the coaching staff, and this is a tape study comment, it's not, I have no inside information, it's just a tape study comment. I think they're still trying to figure out the best way to use Jamal Adams. That's my sense watching the tape. Because he's not been blitzing a ton, which is what a lot of people think he does really well. They've played a lot of split safety, so he hasn't automatically been on the line of scrimmage. He was on the line of scrimmage a little more this past week than he was week one, but I think they're trying to figure that out. I'm not saying he's not a good player. That's not my point. You know, there are very few transcendent players that are great at everything, Ian. And you have to try to find out, particularly in the context of a defense where there's other players, you have to try to figure out how to best deploy a player to maximize his particular skill set.
Okay, I'll get to this quick. We're going to save this. We're going to revisit this probably in the weeks to come as well. Because I do have something good I want to get to real quick as well. But Kevin, what jumped out at you from what he said?
I mean, he said he thinks Seattle is still figuring out how to use him. And that's okay when you bring in a rookie who you're just learning about and, you know, you're trying to figure out where his strengths are. I think it's at least mildly concerning when you're talking about a guy that you traded a king's ransom for and just gave $1 jillion.
I would agree. I think one of the things that kind of he said many people think he does well in reference to him blitzing.
Well,
not a ringing endorsement.
We are guilty of this on this show a lot, but we can refer back to other conversations we have on the show because we have Steve Palazzolo, we have Hugh Millen, we have Greg Cosell. But what are the numbers from Palazzolo? 13 or 16 times that he's blitzed this year?
Yep.
Well, I forget which one it is.
Yeah.
And we know 0 sacks, but 0 hits, 0 hurries. So is he blitzing well?
No. I mean, no. And so he's not doing that well, not getting home in that regard. And then on top of that, no one's more respected in terms of watching the tape than Greg Cosell. And basically what he's saying is I can't figure out what he's supposed to be doing and what he does great and what he does well. Big game this weekend. He's got a couple guys coming at him, and Thielen and Jefferson. You got if Cook plays, a hell of a running back as well. So we'll revisit this later on. Let me get to something good real quick. Yeah. Big day on Monday. We're going to tell you how you can get involved with the Mayor IPA, our charity beer. It's a second annual one, Kevin. One week from today, it will be released at Georgetown Brewing. We have in the past done like the last growler, the first growler, things like that. This year we have, I think they call it a 6-barrel keg, which is basically about 45 pints of beer, okay, which is nice for a get-together on the weekend, maybe.
Let's say maybe you have 10 folks getting together for a tailgate each. You have 3 or 4 before you head into a game, potentially.
We're going to give you a chance to bid on that on Monday.
I love it.
Starting on Monday. And it's not like you can go down there with most of their beers and say, hey, I want a keg of the mayor. No. Like, it's either growler or you can have one there. You can have one at the brewery. You can actually enjoy that this year. This is different because we didn't do that last year.
Thank goodness.
Mayor IPA goes on sale a week from today. All the proceeds benefit Helinski's Hope, Avery Huffman Defeat DIPG Foundation, and the Jordan Morris Foundation. More coming up on Monday. I'm jacked. I think it's an absolutely sensational beer, and it goes for a great cause. Last year, it sold out in 5 days. Actually, 6.5 days. 6.5 days, officially. We're going to try to top that this year.
That's a tall ask.
It is a tall ask. Do you like beer, people? Then come drink some. We'll tell you more about that on Monday. We'll take a break, come back. Rob Rang next.